Okay, welcome to the Odelay Show in English, July 12th, 2021. Edition of this show today is a mixture of author's reflection upon the craft of writing fiction, as discussed several times before on this show. And some political commentary that's coming to the show as well. In fact, I've kind of come to this point in the road before, but it was while I was still on hiatus and commented and did an edition of the show at that time, a couple years ago. Now, the reason for the confluence of the two topics, though, and I'm previously it was just author's commentary on world building and character development more specifically, but this is dealing with those two issues, method of writing and the political commentary that is its context. And the reason for the confluence of these topics into one discussion in today's edition stems from the material common ground shared between character development and a realist style of the story plotting in this genre and the political difficulties of the contemporary culture that's the backdrop of the story. So, quick show, really. Unless you're listening to the Russian edition. The first three novels are a boiler because I'm less fluent. The fastest ones are Spanish. They're rapid. Rapido. For the first three novels were boilerplate crime fiction books for my fan base, whatever it may be. Would already know that. Narrated from the perspective of a police detective. That's a good candidate for the last sentence that somebody hears me say before they tune me out forever. But there are lots of them in my shtick. And they're all equally lethal for budding acquaintances, relationships, and just it's hard to tell which ones are which, to do the actual deed or even give a conversation. But I painted the protagonist in those first three books into a forensic corner right from which I was only able to extricate him with lesbian werewolves and roller derby girls, and that was because my inexperience and my greenness, led to a nice fantastic realism kind of work. And I worked it for three books, even started a fourth one along those same lines, and I was done with it. But so I didn't finish it, and the fourth one kind of evolved a little. We'll talk about that in a minute. So those first three were bubblegum fiction for grown-ups, you know what I'm saying? There was cuss words and stuff, very marketable genre, very typical motif and, thing that you see movies all the time, film, pop culture. They were cliche riddled, and that was intentional. I would just turn phrases. The more well lubricated and well used and battered, the better. It's detective fiction. It's a thing. We're Americans. It's not just our genre, but it's definitely a niche out here. So the fourth one, as I mentioned, I ditched what would have been the fourth installment in the Pizza Noir series. The fourth was the same pen name, but it was a different universe, and it was longer and more serious, and it was still very abrupt in nature, but I fretted over it more during the subsequent drafting, so the prose was more refined and exacting. Another key difference was the story was told from the perspective of a statutory criminal, albeit a pensive and morally motivated one. But no werewolves or roller derby girls playing the foil for that protagonist, because I'd grown that much to know to avoid writing the staff into things whence they couldn't be extricated, where I could get by and conclude the thing without having to delve into fantasy, the canonical werewolves and vampires and the like. Those things I have come to realize are real, but they just aren't as sexy or flashy often as are made apparent in werewolf movies. I don't know, whatever, I'm off the point. Anyway, no werewolves or roller derby girls played the foil for only other mortals. That was so far and may have been summarily my best effort at the so-called Great American Novel. It was only, the first draft was written in only 60 days. I typed a page every day for 2 months or whatever it was. And that was it. Those were the chapters. They're short chapters. They page turn fairly well. And it's because the original constraint was that they were a single-spaced typed page long, each entry into it. So it was boilerplate. I don't know if you can call that the great American novel therefore. But I poured over the thing, you know, very meticulously and gilded it. And, it did its thing. I was swinging for them. So it's like, it had, traction literarily, where the previous, we couldn't really argue that they were like, they're pulp, production. Like, they weren't really literature. But this one, based on the entire gestalt of the effort in my background and my experience to that time, it could be critically deconstructed. And so it was a novel, it was literature. Great American in the sense that it was shallow and murderous and, unique and mine and relatively rare. I mean, there are plenty of hack writers, but there are fewer of us than there are of everybody all counted. So even if the first draft was written in 60 days, and you can, so I'm calling it that at a discount, my best effort at the great American novel so far. But you sense a trend. These are maturing literarily, and it brings us to the problem I've got with the one currently in drafting. So although I labored over the subsequent drafts, it was still boilerplate material. You could argue topically, right? It didn't stretch over anyone's lifetime, really. It was just, it occurred in real time. You think that's neat and you see it on TV. Wow, but really, to be honest, that's a lot easier than doing somebody's the autobiography or what, the biography of somebody, a fictional person's life and their impact on the universe over time and historically and all of that. That's harder than just spot coverage of a fictional character for some stretch of your life. It's like two lunar cycles, and then you call that, groundbreaking. I don't know. But the voiceover chapters from the original were from the original draft. I actually voiced them over before I put the thing to subsequent drafting and final hard copy production. So when you listen to the voiceovers, they are, and there's some, there's a difference because some of that stuff kind of got smoothed out in editing and whatever. But at the same time, generally kind of the same thing went down. Just a few different words, choices of, little dog legs of the plot and what have you. Materially, they're, much the same. The print mode is less forgiving than the audio, but that's just an aside. If any of my, fan base, if you're listening to this, I get the feeling that I'll be gone and that you aren't yet born at the time of recording of this edition on the 12th of July 2021. So, whatever. I mean, you could do that if you wanted to compare. I think really the only people who'd be totally interested in putting that kind of time in it would be like, psychiatrists and stuff trying to, on a project. I don't think any of my readership would go to such trouble because they being my readership would know, like, or it would get it, this is kind of it, don't overthink it. And that's definitely true. Page a day for 60 days, don't overthink it. Now you can reflect upon it at great depth, at infinite depth, please feel free, that's life. So the book's been hard to follow, though, as my aspirations for literary gravity kind of gain weight, it becomes work that I'm not, and I used to, I don't know, guess I could do it, but my method would definitely have to change, and I'm too sloppy and unorganized going into the thing. That's why, and it's because maybe my background writing news copy. I'm not even sure I want to or even able to, however, follow that book that seems to me hard to follow at this time, and here's why. It seems the book I'm trying to write is about a dead man, moreover seemingly written by a dead man. And from some perspectives, that may be true, unless I'm going to live forever, which is the whole idea. But I'm, times are tough. The world's against me. I may not get what I want. I'd hate to think that I have some shortcoming in my in the integrity of my faith that would cause me to metaphysically find oblivion when it's not necessary, but it does seem like in this sordid and troubled world, the matter's contested. You know, the protagonist of the new book, Richie Jones, is after serving a prison sentence for a war on drugs related conviction, United States federal war on drugs, the folly of Richard Nixon and Joe Biden and the like, and exacerbated by Reagan and perpetuated these days until it's just, you can't tell whether, you know, is my life worth more or less as a pothead than, say, a Yemeni five-year-old who's being murdered by the United States or its affiliates? Well, I don't know. Oh, the philosophy of life. After serving a prison sentence for a war on drugs-related conviction anyway, our new protagonist in the current and possibly doomed effort at my fifth book, novel, and now being clean and sober himself, Richie Jones, the protagonist, returns to daylight only to be shocked by his fresh perspective at a doomed society. He realizes the reality of the American failed state and the prevailing dark face of humanity, and it's all well past the point of return. The point of return is that so this work of fiction is colliding with like a reality. Like, okay, I'm break that up for you here. So the narrator, who is not the protagonist, by the way, this time, and I'm trying, you know, he provides some ingratiating comic relief, but, and it may be the, to be honest, that's why I want to finish it, because he's, because there's some political points that get made that are invaluable and make the thing, the book just, you know, it lends a pass for some superficiality with respect to what the actual protagonist ends up doing. So it, maybe, you know, that narrator might be saving us all. I can get this one out into production and then just move on from fiction writing altogether if I'm inclined. Or maybe when I'm hot and after the thing gets finished, maybe I'll be continuing. But anyway, the ingratiating comic relief provided by the narrator doesn't resolve the hard questions that arise from this work of fiction colliding with the reality surrounding it, the drafting of the prose. So my fictional protagonist has run afoul of our world's modern human disaster, a failed state which is often the focus of the Eau de la Show, right? The new protagonist faces the troubled world from a different perspective than that of the predecessor protagonist, and Rick Thompson it was, Hipster Briggs, who took on the problem of the failed state of humanity from a very, an age old, from a very narrow ethical perspective, as he came to subjectively justify through his meta-analysis of sex, death, and karma, his own career of murdering drug dealers. Now, that's the previous book. That's the one that came after the bubblegum werewolf books, and that, you know, that was more literarily formidable, or at least more, you know, out of the fantastic realism genre and into the kind of road trip standard murder spree genre of American popular fiction. So along with werewolves and roller derby girls, the option of deciding to just go after the bad guys by an anti-hero is also restricted from the playbook of our new friend Richie Jones. And that's really, you know, that's not the world's fault or Richie's fault. That's just that my, you know, I'm wearing bigger shoes as an author and as I continue to grow, and I'm not going to want to be writing the same book. I think our new protagonist Richie's outlay is less religious, less eschatological. So there, you know, I'm justifying his choices not to do what the predecessor protagonist did. But I mean, he's a different guy. This is, you know, my vision of this story. He's not the same. He's picked up differently. We get to know his background. There is a particular watershed moment and a situation he goes through that paints for him the world in this way. It's different than the point at which we met the previous protagonist. He was just, that was green-billed going a different direction. Current protagonist Richie Jones is faced with the same nonsense you and I currently face, though, and we're kind of nudging up against the nut here. And it is a pessimistic outlook, fictional or not, you look outside right now or around. Also, when I was on a writing jag, some years back, I'd been publishing at least book a year for several years, and this one had been delayed for several, though, because I returned to school for a post-bac study and some graduate work in late 2016. I didn't lay all that down, finally, until the post-bac got done in spring of 2020, and then I finished the, and for the last semester or two or so of it, I was, a couple semesters, I was concurrently doing the graduate program, and then that graduate work concluded in the fall of 2020. So while our political context was certainly already catastrophic in 2017, which was the first copyright date on my last book, because I had gotten it done basically through the winter break and got it to press in late 16 or early 17. In late 16. In fact, I got it to press in late 16 and didn't get Pizza Noir number 3 to press until early 2017. That's how that worked out. It was already written, but I just had kind of reverted all the focus onto Hipster Bricks to get it done because it was a bigger project and I wanted it more perfect. And then Pizza Noir 3, Pie in the Sky, was basically done, and I just polished it up and set it out the door in early 2017. And then I had started the post back in late 2016 as well. That's right. That must be right. Anyway. I think I may be off of it. I'm not sure because I don't remember working on that stuff heavy like that while I was having to take those early math classes. I may be off a year, and it may have been that Hipster Bricks came out in late 2016. No, that's right. Damn it. What am I talking? Late 2015. And the Pizza Noir 3, the final Pizza Noir thing, came out in early 2016. I think that must be what had happened. But anyway, if you follow that, it doesn't really matter. But our political content, when I let up on that and focused back on academic writing for a couple of years, as I had to do, rather than my own meandering, you know, night writing, while our political context was certainly already catastrophic in 2017, today even anybody without eyes can see it, right? Okay, it's just been made more evident for a number of reasons. You can still perceive the ominous predicament. Now, if we're out of order today, no return having passed the event horizon, then you could say it was fated that we were out of luck 5 years ago, 10, 20, 50, 75, what have you. You can say that, and you can make a very cogent argument about that. But the end runs kind of grow more profound and like just obvious. So when I started this book, and this guy, I realized I was right, and I was, oh man, this is the hook. This guy gets out of the pokey. And he, like, you know, he's like, holy crap. Oh, the humanity. My goodness. He got, you know, he completed his education in there. And he's seeing a failed state, and he's seeing, you know, horrific. It's just like, this is not what was sold to me in public schools, you know. But now, when there's literally been, like, material assaults, like, happened to be concurrent with my trying to onboard as a public educator against the public school system and egalitarian education in the United States, and granted the Patriot Act, and the kids you're trying to teach were born after the Patriot Act. They have no idea what you're talking about, you know, and they just, you're wrong because they've been told that I'm wrong because their teachers vote, you know, monolithically going the other way, blue pill, and, you know, constitutional libertarian type advocates is just, we're bad. And that's the dictum that's taught to the teachers. The teachers believe it. The schools believe it. The children believe it. The admins believe it. It's just, and they don't even know they've been stolen. Morons. But you know, now it's kind of like, you know, and like we've all, there's been problems with the deep state and the surveillance state and the war state long time. We'll just in the modern iteration say since World War II, even more modern since George W. Bush and his Patriot Act. But that was 20 years ago. And now, the, you know, the youth were born after that, and there's no telling them anything, you know. So that nanny state. So like, you know, now it's just like literally like you can't, there is no freedom of speech. And the truth is no defense. We were always taught in J school, like, as long as you're honest and you're best of your ability telling the truth, like, fine, you know, that's your defense. And it's kept, for the most part, journalists out of jail. Not anymore, dude. And I don't work. I'm unemployed. I mean, there is no quarter. And I'm in a kind of a small red area. And they're all too happy to just scuttle the thing so they can be like, ah, man, and chase bunnies and just kind of, oh, we're going to, you know, we're red hillbillies and just screw. And, you know, we don't listen to, you know, fine. But with the baby that they've thrown out with the bathwater is constitutional, like, law, like civil liberties. But they're monolithic and they're small and they're a little rat pack out in the desert. And that works. That's worked forever. That's why, you know, the nomadic people go forever for as long as stars exist. You know, they just have their thing and they have their water and they have their, it just goes. I mean, it does go. That wheel does roll. So they're so excited, all these preppers, you know, and let's just go ahead and knock it over, huh? Might as well. And then on the other, you can make the argument, what's our alternative? Well, the problem is that both ends of those red and blue pills have all thrown the baby out with the bathwater. And the one, you know, piecemeal group of people who are taking it on the chin are your individualists, which is to some extent taboo now to be an individualist. And certainly in any sort of operation that sounds in the Bill of Rights. Very disappointed in humanity for rearing its ugly head into my American egalitarian libertarian perspective. It makes me want to vomit. And it makes me realize the futility of the new protagonist I've got here. Well, I'm not going to solve this. I'm going to rewrite Atlas Shrugged, you know? And so I do think an effort at approaching the matter through literature is much different now than it was 5 years ago. And you say, well, it was a screwed up failed state 5 years ago. What's the difference now? Well, it seems more obvious and now politically a little more hazardous. And I'm not necessarily worried about it, but I mean, but it's the principle of the thing. What am I even wasting my time with this? Like, it's obvious. I write editorials about this all the time. So I bring this author's quandary to light here in this program today, where I've been known to discuss both writing method as well as the politics of humanity. Maybe this will help me move the project on to completion, because I am a little bit stuck. And I'm a little bit lazy and I'm out of practice. But it also could be my last work of fiction. I could return to nonfiction, strictly. Yeah, you know, and at least deal with the problems more directly. Or I could just say foreign policy is a disaster and it's all wrong, and it's been so bad for so long that now domestic policy is a disaster and it's all wrong. Full stop. Why write any longer than that? You know, I mean, I'm being, you know, a little bit, you know, sarcastic, but I mean, but there's an edge on all of that, a very real edge on that, whatever it was, sentence and a half. I'd switch my focus to math, metaphysics, or linguistics. You know, my post-bac was math. And it compartmentalized all of my existing kind of social science and fieldwork kind of very well. You know, and I also have, now I'm more inclined to like, okay, well, what's the most economical use of my time? Well, you know, because that's the calculus of my composition and my writing. You know, it's like, all right, this is going somewhere. I got another book about another guy who's just grousing about the government, and the people who like are inclined maybe to read it, or the fan base or whatever, like you know it's the only differences are nuanced between my position now and my position then, how this protagonist hands it as opposed to the other ones. What about our new protagonist, Richie Jones? Right, he's become sadly aware that the context of his existence is a hell. He figured it out in prison, where it was more normal than outside. The venues of power and leadership are occupied by unconstitutional factions. And here you go, you've heard this a thousand times from me. Jackbooted, brown-shirted, heretical zealots. Excuse me. Foreign interests, wave after wave of falsely entitled ignoramuses. An hereditary autocracy, thieves, murderers, hookers. He finds examples of failed states at every turn, faces solitude, widespread cowardice, total surveillance state police state, ubiquitous pre-crime detention, en masse, you know, deviation from which is in itself a taboo and an incumbent crime, a plainly, he can see, successful in-run assaults against core institutions of American egalitarianism, i.e. the free press, the public schools, free markets, anti-imperialism, and civil liberties. And I'll tell you, say this a tenth time, you know, it can be said I'm a Johnny-come-lately. People have realized this thing is way out of line a long time ago. You know, America's been murdering people in Iraq for 30 years, you know, and Afghanistan for 20 or whatever, you know, and it just goes on and on, and it's not all. And now it's just all over the Africa Command and all over the Middle East, and we've got saber-rattling about what's going on for hegemony off the shore of China. On the other side of the Pacific, you shitting me? And like, in the Ukraine? What? You know? And it's like, America, you know, and we've created this refugee crisis in Europe, just wrecked it for everybody. It was just completely ruined. America could have had a good 21st century. The whole world could have had. And there is nothing now but the let's just frag it and all stick together. Yeah, you morons, and you're just all dead. In my fiction work so far, I've typically set stories within real-world backdrops. Increasingly so, as I previously mentioned, notwithstanding werewolves, I've increasingly moved away from the bubblegum and fantasy realism toward a harsher realism. The previous ones were all written quickly, and this one was begun immediately after the end of the previous one, but its drafting, as I mentioned, was interrupted by a few years of post-bac studies and then a year or two of graduate work. And on this end of things, my perspective is more cynical and pessimistic, I'm afraid, it seems. And it has in part to do with how I was treated when I returned with new credentials to say, alas, look at I, here I am with my new credential. I now can bring these 20 years of fieldwork into the classroom. And they're all like, you big fag, get out. You and your ugly kid. And your weird name and your earring and your long hair. And that's it. I got a $30,000 credential here. It is useless. Where I live, anyway. See, I'm a little bit pissed off about it, and in the context of what I've seen, all the power grabbing and the towering collapse of the empire's overexpansion, which has fallen back on its people, which was the design of those who orchestrated the September 11th attacks in the first place, and it was in response to overarching empire. Now we've murdered millions and millions of people on your name, using dollars. Additional people, and destabilize the entire planet politically. And there will be no, it was already going to be tough. Life's tough. This is what I tell my teenagers. You don't borrow trouble because there's already enough shit going on. And it's already entropic enough. And it's already dicey. But when you just ensure that the thing is a complete exploded toilet, well, and then you get all this nihilism. The world's become much darker, all of which has caught my protagonist, the petty offender, apparently, in an auspiciously hopeless sociological trap. I don't think he can beat Leviathan. I don't think he can. I don't think Richie Jones, the ex-con, can't vote, can't own a firearm, or is that old ways of thinking. Therefore, he can't, you know, I don't think he can beat Leviathan. Nobody has yet, right? Nobody. Why would this guy be able to? So maybe the only question is, how can he try to save his dignity? Well, the truth is, by and large, in effect, basically criminalized. If you want to get real true about this, then, you know, I don't know. Hence the quandary. Rude, unwashed reality, that is. Rude, unwashed reality is crowding me, has invaded what was once my delightful pastime of fiction writing. Or maybe my creativity is just crushed because of the surveillance state. I've always been aware of it, just as a troubled youth, and then as a politically spun young adult, and then spun indeed I was, then as a journalist, and then more recently as a press corps writer, and more recently as a public educator. But as a mathematician, I can say that I am that now. I mean, I'm not working. And a philosopher, which I've always said I was running down. As a mathematician and philosopher, I can tell you the observer effect is very real. You know, it's a physical... An experiment watched can be affected by the fact that it's being observed in physics, okay? And in really all empirical studies and otherwise. And that's one of the benefits of rapid boilerplate production mode. You just whip it out and go. It's kind of like news copy. It's why it's so easy. It's why the press kind of has its own kind of zombie self-propulsion, you know? Same with boilerplate, writing pulp. Boom, boom, boom. You don't have too many people overthinking what they're reading of your, you know, manuscript. So all rights or liberties require some, and there you see meta references to it in all sorts of, you know, written content, film, you know, all rights and liberties require some measure of privacy, which is not available during permanent war, nor is it available in a digitized market economy of total information collection, you know, that the millennials are hard sold on, especially the ones born after the Patriot Act. Not that there's really a material difference, except for that the technology has made it totally more plausible that everybody's down to the last quark is known. Certainly not in the context of both of these phenomena. In turn, this affects the literary or prosaic writing process. Certainly affects the forensic process and investigative processes. So in light of such an unfortunate reality, I guess the answer is that you run an unnetworked machine as your word processor. I mean, it's one of the things that's pretty common practice. In light of such an unfortunate reality, I think, or in my case, a typewriter, but at some point it has to be input. In light of such an unfortunate reality, I think my protagonist, that's why Hipster Brick seemed, it was done plot, in terms of plotting, before it ever saw anything digital. In light of such an unfortunate reality, I think that this one is not the case, and it's affected me, I believe. It's affected the process. It's, in effect, scuttled it. In light of such an unfortunate reality, I think my protagonist is as doomed as any other non-fictional modern proletarian, and also as doomed as what remained of American liberty even before the Patriot Act and prior to the American Empire's foolhardy end run on total permanent global war, you know, the Politburo's response to the 2001 terrorist attacks, which is exactly what the enemy, if you will, wanted us to do, and we've done it. And look at it now. Orwell was right. I mean, he was right then. That's the thing. He set that in the future, like, hey, isn't this going to be weird? But what he was saying was, it's like this right now. Only now, it's an even bigger hell because, you know, all the tools to make it a hell there are many that weren't previously in existence in whenever that was written, 48. As I said earlier, in certain very unnerving perspectives, we're all already gone. We're boiled frogs. And people sell that dope like it hardest possible. Be with us. Be like everybody else. Do it this way, or you know, and like the tyranny of the majority. Look how it affects 10 to 14 year olds, and you know, teens up to 18 if they can't get through that, you know. And that's most people. That's where most people's intellectual level is. And you just wave that chalupa flag, and that's it. And like, oh, here's my flare. And like, if you don't have that, this trashy humanity will not accept you. They'll murder you to death. Faith alone, therefore, is all anyone may have now among the boiled frogs. And you're weird if you're, like, breathing and alive, you know? That's the only thing good there can or will be to remember, is one's own faith. And that's why the study of history either comes across as confusing or it comes across as an embarrassing indictment of humanity, one or the other. Either because it's a big lie that doesn't make any sense, or it's the truth, and you're like, holy moly, no wonder. Jeez. You know, because these horrible cycles repeating, even though they're totally preventable for thousands upon thousands of years, and you figure out why. Or you're told that it's not happening and that, you know, the stork came or something and you're confused about it. It's just, it's too bad, because that's most people for, you know, kingdom come. Millions of years in every direction. It's just how you do it. So we lie to the children and keep repeating the disasters and leave a few fables for the elite survivals or the alien archaeologists or whoever might find themselves sifting through our unworthy rubble. President Carter's, quote, creeping malaise, unquote, is something now better described as a maybe a high-velocity, day-walking hell trip right through the front door into hell. And we're already in the outskirts, and there's no stopping, and it will only get worse. It's a big new. The people who find themselves lucky enough not to be in a famine zone or a war zone at this time are only in the total surveillance state, police state zone while the world begins to end all around them are just trying to find a comfortable place to stick their head in the sand and hide and die. This is George W. Bush's Pax Americana. What an edifice of faith. Gee, thanks, Georgie. And he's just a figurehead, I realize. All of the neoconservative traitors that lied us into war and stampeded the press to stampede the Congress into its complicity to make that knee-jerk response in 2001. You know, he was just there in the way as a useful idiot, as is the case with most presidents, if not all, since I don't know when. Truman and before, you know, even. I guess Eisenhower. I guess since they shot Jack. You know. So. So they're not in charge. It's these, and of course that's what these people wanted. They want that military, permanent, you know, hinterland right in the Middle East forever. And those Arabs whose land it is won't ever go for it. And so it's permanent total war forever. And they don't care that everybody goes with them because they're just going to walk it back. Bunch of rats. They, you know, I'm telling you, man, not our brothers and sisters, really. So, like, you know, what does a Nazarene have to say? Jesus was a Palestinian, by the way. You know, it's like, can't save them all. You got to forgive people. They don't know what they're doing. But at some point, you've just got a bunch of fanged, murderous rats. Well, don't eat, you know, you got to get out of the way of that train. And I was saying this to whoever I was having a philosophical conversation with the other day, the following I was saying. There are fewer people who are trying to immanentize the eschatology than you'd be made to believe by the corporate media flush. Okay? Therein lies one of the main hopes for surviving and redirecting and correcting humanity on Earth's path forward right now. There aren't as many people. Like, if you really count, like, the neocons who were involved with tipping the war state towards the knee-jerk overreaction, like, they were just all very keenly placed in operatives by the international Zionist war state in United States government, and the time was right, and they planned it, and it was auspicious, and they took the chance, they got it. I mean, it's just physics. It's obvious, you know. Boom. It's a lever. It goed. It went. It did it. It was just in place. And when the time was right, it went. And it wasn't a majority of anybody. It was just these, you know, these old rich, tone-deaf, Bible-fruit idiot morons who are the quote-unquote ruling class, which we're not supposed to have, been infiltrated forever. Look at Reagan. Jesus. The best KGB agent that ever existed. You know? Oh, you won, Ronnie. Yeah. So, it takes two to tango. You guys don't understand peace. So, anyway, thanks for the Pax Americana, George Bush. It's the end of the world. Who knows what it's going to be like next cycle? All the same problems will be repeated. And they'll take, you know, plays out of the current book. And they're like, all you got to do to knock it over is just do this. Just lay in the way. It's not even going to be, it'll be in your lifetime. You'll still be young. Theoretically, there are some alternatives, or at least there were some. I think it may be too late for the people of the United States to have a super awesome 21st century because the sad contemporary global state of affairs is generally attributable to the horribly interventionist U.S. foreign policy and war state and empire that squandered the peace and incentivized general murder and mayhem worldwide and destabilized the world. Now, like I said, the actual instigators are fewer than you made to think. But they have hard-sold and successfully to this new generation of people who don't know anything but what they've been told and to steal, and that's how they'll survive. And that's all too common in this very large universe of ours. Learn to defend against it, and we do well to do so. Learn to defend against it here, because it's an old trick, and it works, and it's working right now. You're watching it happen. That's why there is no Bill of Rights anymore in the United States. Basically a crime to even try to sing that song. So if it's not too late, there should be, and just more generally speaking, off that particular point of the numbers of the other side here working against you. I mean, of course, now you have huge, huge movements just shutting off, building walls up against the United States and shutting us off, and that we've radicalized so many people who hate us and want us gone. Just, I mean, hey, not maybe it is a small number, but it is still coming out of our leadership and our name all of this murder for all these decades. So if it's, but anyway, more generally on the ontology of things that exist moving forward, if it's not too late, there should be some alternatives to the people's resignation to mass destruction and tyranny they face now due to the ongoing folly and stupidity of the world's masters of war. Some healthy faction of them kind of always survive somehow. But I guess they just, that's a pretty common type. Maybe they can't, don't survive, but it's a pretty common manifestation of the failed state of grace, of the dark face of humanity. You know, okay, so anyway, proper alternatives require elbow grease and suffrage, though, and there are plenty of options that are completely wrongheaded. The standard toolkit, excuse me, for humanity on its way down includes doubling down on long-existing bad policies like gender wars or race wars or any other types of widespread organized violence. We have a hot race war in the United States now, and it's a result of propaganda, corporate propaganda, the point, the object of which was to fracture the public. So that it couldn't unite in solidarity against the usurpation of the United States government and the end runs and power grabs that have occurred. And these are the wrong kind of anarchists, the kind who are not libertarian and don't want to leave you alone on your farm being cool and being law, not hurting anybody. And that they're fascist socialists who just, they're just opportunistic bloodlust en masse, hive-minded, and that's what's happened. Other popular selections include the technocracies of classic science. The flu for 2 years, my ass. Give me a break. Other popular, and it worked, moreover. So embarrassing. I mean, this is one of those kind of watermarks where you're like, I actually am not the same, taxonomically the same as these people. You know what I'm saying? You feel like saying it, and you find yourself saying it. You find yourself at least saying it yourself. I don't say it into this microphone. I just did, but whatever. Think about it. Now, other popular selections include the technocracies of classic science fiction, pre-crime surveillance and detention of classic dystopian fiction, as I've mentioned, political knavery, prostitution, and the whoring out of the citizenry, and the prostitutionalization of the economy. Like, pretty much, I think everybody, do you know anybody who's, like, self-aware and aware of what's going on around them and aren't a trust fund baby who, like, hasn't come to the realization that they either have to, they basically have to sell their body one way or the other, whether it's in slave labor or sex or some, but that's what the currency's based on. Never mind that it's also very heavily hedged on Latin American cocaine. Those people don't have any love for us. Just getting in their way forever. You ever had 100 years of solitude? Jesus. Radicalism, death cults, oblivion, addiction culture, hatred, war, factionalization, libertarianism, society, high society, education, intellectualism, organized crime, travel, murder, love, racketeering, suicide, isolationism, you know, long strange trips, civil disobedience, and oddsmanship, ad aspera, ad astra, etc. These are all things of the humanity, okay, that are in the toolkit. It only works if you work it, though. Historically, the correct tools being implemented wisely, of course, is the rare and precious exception. Look at the derelict Congress for legislature, for example. So you see my problem, or the incumbent protagonist Richie, or the White House, for that matter, or the problem of the incumbent protagonist Richie Jones. World's caught up to my bubblegum fiction. And there's no easy or fun way out. My readership isn't changing. People are either part of the solution or they're not. Isn't my job done here, then? Done, you know. And yet there is the serious consideration that much of my audience, my readership, are yet unborn rebel sifters or librarians, disinterested librarians or alien literati, whatever. And for them, there might be cause for me, therefore, to continue my writing, maybe. But, you know, maybe that'll be nonfiction and maybe that'll be. And at some point, if I'm up here thinking in this way, I'll go deal with gravity or, you know, computer programming, continue along those lines. I took the long way towards a science career, didn't I? And luckily, headed off all that pay that I would have gotten if I had done it timely when I was younger, but I wouldn't have known. So now I get to do all that stuff on my own shoestring budget, food stamps and the like. But that perspective competes with this one. It doesn't end well, so why bother? At least the end of the previous book was colorful, albeit dark, for Rick Thompson. And I don't really even have the headspace available right now to put Richie Jones, my new would-be protagonist, on the right track. Now, and you know, he really needs to be an anti-hero, but what's he going to do? You know, is he going to... If I'm honest, I mean, I don't even know. Just kind of go into that good night. This is what, and I also, I'm 46, so like my knees are a little squirrelier than they were. I'm not able to work out like it was. Like my eyes, all that's kind of going. Like my own teenager's gotten in trouble. And it's like, basically, he's all grown up, even though he's not technically so. And like, but as far as I can tell him anything, but like, I'm middle aged now, and I'm like, man. So I'm one of these kind of these shuffling old dudes now, the writer type. That's great with purple glasses, but I'm still like, I know what the man was talking about. Was it Hemingway? Go into that good night. Of course, he's shitting himself. That was pretty abrupt. Now that I'm done with school again and again unemployed, I've picked up that unfinished manuscript, and in response to that feeling, you ever get the feeling he was being watched? I switched back to my manual typewriter on which the original draft of the current manuscript was written. It didn't get finished, but all the characters are more or less fleshed out. It's just kind of a matter of, it's all set up, what the heck am I going to do with it? Only to discover that instead of finding a measure of privacy and creative freedom there, I realize I'm just writing the same editorial I've written 100 times already for the Odelay Show or whoever else is listening at the bar during open mic night in between songs. So this edition of the Odelay Show, or in Russian, I call it the "Come on, dude, Davai Shuvak," or in Espanol, I call it La Radio Odelay. This edition of the Odelay Show has been brought to you by a fractured North America under the rule of Chinese viceroys and its economy, as well. The cocaine-based dollar and its purveyors in the service of Queen Isabella. A fractured Europe in the thrall of the new and justiciable Islamic Caliphate. What are you going to ask them to do, International, we gave them what they wanted. The radicals down there, the non-secularists. Trying to tell a bunch of guys in the desert with beards that they're supposed to suck it. Went from 400 to like 40,000 people now. Bin Ladenites. International capitalist racketeer. And it was just because we could. Knew the trouble was there waiting for us. Did it anyway. And then tripled down. Each presidential administration moving forward. International capitalist racketeers and fascist red millennials, all funded by the same permanent war state that was perpetuated by the weirdo, murdering, traitor, baby boomer, usurpers, Nixonite, Reaganite, Cheneyites, Rumsfeldites, Clinton, right? Wolfowitzes, the Kagans, Clinton, Obama turncoats, who have immanentized the eschaton and still somehow occupy the national government to prosecute their global empire at the expense of everyone's future. And they're not even the brains. There's more of them than the people who are actually manipulating these levers of power. It's just the old money. It's the same old them. It's behind both of the major world wars. This is why we shouldn't have gotten even into World War I. Say what you will about getting into World War II. We certainly shouldn't have been in Korea or Vietnam. And we certainly shouldn't be in the Middle East now. And now the world's going to end, and this has been by and large what's basically contributed to the thing. And if it doesn't end, it's going to be like, well, this is a great rock, and this is some great dirt in this cave that we live. It didn't have to be this way. This edition of the Odelay Show, I'll continue on with these sponsors, has been brought to you by slavers and whoremongers, vicious prostitutes, incumbent tyrannical patriarchs, feminist eugenicists, opportunist vampires, I told you they were real vampires, vermin technocrats, race-baiting tyrants, and revisionists, liars, people who lie to children. This edition of the and certainly to you. This edition of the Odelay Show is brought to you by the stupefaction of America and the secularists who've wrecked the United States education system and the zealots who've catastrophically conflated church and state. They're both guilty of the same end circumstance. And this is your stop. Get off the bus, oh ye damned. See you next time.